Okay. So excited. Can you tell by my face?
Yes.
I should not be excited, so I apologize, no, because, you know, for people that have lost a victim, it's not exciting for them at all. And in this case, we have four. And I'm going to try to keep the names and everybody straight. But got mom here with me.
Yes.
You know, even though we're doing remote, we've not been able to do our drinks or anything like that, I do have mom sayings.
Oh, my gosh.
Let me find one.
Actually, I was glad they went.
Really?
Let's
see here. Where are my mom sayings?
Oh, doing it.
Here we go. Here we go.
What?
Mom.
I don't know if you laugh like that.
Knows that a spelling bee is smarter than a talking parrot.
You should be ashamed.
You know that one's cute.
That's cute.
Mom also has told me and Elena, who's not here with us recording because she's at a wedding. I guess it's more important than true crime. That the only murderer that gets enough fiber is a serial killer.
I like that one better than the first one. You know what? I'm going to have some daughter sayings next time.
You say that all the time. So anyway,
I know.
Name is Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder. I'm interrupting mom, and with the delay, she can keep talking and her lips are moving, but no one can hear her.
That's so bad.
Okay.
But I don't even know why I talk then.
I pause so you can, but when I think you're going to say something I don't want to hear, I just keep going. Now, I almost forgot. I have got to recommend a podcast called The Prosecutors.
Oh.
Absolutely love it. They have two, actually. The one that's The Prosecutors, where they do deep dives, and I mean deep dives into the cases, and then they have legal briefs, because they're both prosecutors. And they, I mean, it's just so good. Like I said, they're very detailed. I highly, recommend that you listen to their episodes on the case we're about to discuss, and that is the Brian Koberger case, the murder of the four Idaho students in Moscow, Idaho. Kaylee Goncalves, is it Goncalves or Gonclaves? She was 21. Madison Mogan, who was 21. Xana Kernodle, who was 20. And Ethan Chapin, who was 20. They read or went in depth in the 19-page affidavit, which is a very full-bodied affidavit. I will be referring to it in parts. This case is extremely disturbing, and the evidence is that evil is everywhere, even small college towns. It's very reminiscent of Ted Bundy. Now, when news broke out, I don't know if you remember, but it's rare that you have a serial killer now, actually. There's been a decrease of serial killing, and the FBI in particular thinks it's because of technology, DNA. It's almost impossible to commit a murder and not leave some type of evidence. But
yeah, but how do you get rid of an urge like that? Your serial killer.
Well, it's proof that they don't have to, that they can control it.
You know, they have sort of proved that, haven't they?
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, it happens where you never expect it to happen, because no one ever expects murder to happen anywhere.
No, they don't.
I think the only time you might expect it is war areas, gang areas. Other than that, people just don't expect crime to occur, or murder in particular. And so it's just something that's silly to say, quite frankly, because it just happens. I don't know, like, where would you think a serial killer would attack, right? Of course they're going to attack places that are supposed to be safe.
But you hear lots of people say, "It's nothing's ever happened here. Can't believe this happened here.
I know.
I always thought it was somebody else, not us." You hear that all the time.
And we know there are places that are extremely safe. It just doesn't mean you're immune. And when the news broke out, I was instantly, you know, like, okay, what? This is serious. And if they don't catch this guy, he's going to kill again. I was also struck by the fact that it was four people. I'm like, man, that sure is ballsy. And so at first I'm like, okay, is this a serial killer we've not heard about? And like Ted Bundy, who had a personal goal of killing two at the same time, he ended up killing, you know, those co-eds in the college and wounding and maiming. I was like, man, that, you know, that is interesting. Maybe we've had somebody that's been under the radar. But then when I heard about how the crimes were committed and the blood that was everywhere, I mean, there was so much blood, it was dripping out of the walls of the residence. You could see it in the news footage. I'm like, nah, this is a first-time killer. And I knew it was a single perpetrator. I think you believe there might have been a couple people.
I told you I thought it was two people because how the control of four people, especially young people. And you always said, no, I think it was just one.
Yeah.
I remember.
And obviously I've been proven correct, you know, in that.
Again. Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that if Brian Koberger had not been caught, he would have killed again and again and again.
I agree.
He was a budding serial killer. And what makes this case even more disturbing is that a single individual went into a house and slaughtered four people, including a male, within, get this, 13 to 25 minutes.
I know. That's why I thought it was two people. Because four people, young people, you would think could overpower him. That's why I thought there was two. I couldn't believe it was just one person. What are you doing?
I need tissue. My nose is running.
That's old age.
You're the one that's wrapped up in an old lady, Shaw.
That's because I am old.
Sorry for my nostril noise. Okay. Now, you know, in most cases, it's before someone is, you know, guilty, you have to say they're innocent. Whatever. This dude is as guilty as it gets. So I'm not saying that. All right.
Even if one lawyer knows that.
Now, here's the case. Okay. And like I said, I'll go to the affidavit as well, which is written by one of the police officers that was one of the first ones that arrived, but he will not be called to testify because of something where that's just not a good idea. So the affidavit cannot be written by a cop that will be in court later. And so usually the lead detectives are not the ones who write it. It's another officer that's at the scene. Madison, Kaylee, and Zanna were all roommates with two other female roommates in Moscow, Idaho. Madison and Kaylee were seniors, and let me get their pictures up. I was so excited about diving into this that I forgot to bring that up. And again, when I say excited, I'm not excited about the death of these young people, but just the psychology of this killer is what, in fact, that's what got me in, you know, interested in true crime is because of the psychology. And I think I've got a picture of the students. Yeah. So let me pull this up for you so you can see it. And I'm sure, I mean, they're, you know, famous as far as their faces now. But here they are. So these two, were victims. There is, Zanna and then her boyfriend, next to her, Ethan. And, yeah, it's really, really sad.
Young, happy, college, supposed to be the best time of your life.
And I'm wondering if these other two ladies are the other roommates.
I think so.
Okay. Now,
they had two more.
Was it
two or three?
Yeah, they had two more. Now, Ethan didn't live there. He was just there visiting Zanna.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And I believe, okay, so Madison and Kaylee, they're seniors. They were going to graduate this year. 2023, Zanna was a junior. She had her steady boyfriend, Ethan, and he often slept over at the house, which was known as a party house, but actually the prosecutors brought out when they interviewed people that lived there that it actually wasn't that bad of a house. The cops were called there at times for noise complaints, but it wasn't that they had just people there all the time, but they would throw parties that would get loud.
Yeah, but who didn't in college?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, That doesn't mean it's just a party house and everyone goes there every night to party.
Right.
During
And
college.
it seems that the house was a row of houses that were right off the campus, and probably all of them were party houses, you know. But so there's this row of houses, and on the night of November 12th, 2022, Ethan and Zanna went to an on-campus party at a nearby Sigma Chi fraternity. One report says that the party was from like 8 to 9, or maybe that's when they were there, because I would think a party would last longer than an hour. They returned to Zanna's home at 1:45. So I don't know what they did in between, but we do know they did go to one party. Kaylee and Madison went to a downtown sports bar called the Corner Club around 10. They left the bar at 1:30 and they went to a nearby food truck called the Grub Truck. Camera footage at 1:41 a.m. shows them laughing, chatting, and smiling as they wait for their food. And I bet people have seen this. Like, it's, you know, the camera footage, the video, you have the food truck and they're talking, and some people come up to them and talk with them while they're waiting for their food. So it doesn't appear that they're nervous, that anything's wrong. They're just having a good time. Have you seen the video footage?
No.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't seen it.
What's
You have
wrong
it?
with you?
I don't know. I watched everything on that. I don't remember seeing the video of that. But you know, when you're a college kid and you're partying, there's other people come up to you. I mean, who wouldn't be smiling, laughing, having fun?
Right. Yes. Of course, you wouldn't know that because you haven't watched the footage. So they got a ride from a private party. So I'm assuming someone picked them up, gave them a ride. I don't know if it was an Uber, if it was a friend, but that person has been cleared. They are not involved in this at all. And they got home at 1:56 a.m. Now, what's unsettling is actually seeing the footage and seeing these kids, you know, feeling that they're safe, doing normal, everyday fun things, college kid things, and knowing they're going to be dead in about 3 hours.
Terrible.
It's awful.
Helpful.
Kaylee made 7 uncompleted phone calls to a former longtime boyfriend and fellow student between 2:26 and 2:52 a.m. So what this means is she made these 7 phone calls. They're considered incomplete because he never answered. So obviously he's a former boyfriend. You know, was his phone off? Was it silenced? Did he not want to talk to her? You know, was the breakup kind of tough? Don't know. They don't give any details, but they do know that she is alive during those times. Madison also called the same guy, the boyfriend, 3 times between 2:44 and 2:52 with no answer. So it kind of makes you wonder if, you know, Kaylee's trying to get a hold of him. He won't answer her phone. So then Madison decides to use her phone to try to get him to answer so he'll talk to her. You know what I mean? Like, I remember doing that as a kid.
Talk to him that bad. Yeah, I did that when I was younger too. Maybe she just wasn't over him. Want to
Shoot.
talk to him, especially when you're drinking.
I've done that with repairmen that wouldn't return my call.
Share your dog with the bone.
They answer too, and I'm like, oh, your fingers work to hit accept. Oh, you can talk. You haven't lost your voice. Obviously, you can see and hear. Ugh, ridiculous. So that's
A whole other show, people.
2:52. Then at 4 a.m., Zanna got a DoorDash order.
Oh.
The other two roommates had returned by this time around 1 a.m., but Zanna's still up. And originally, police reported that they were both asleep on the ground floor, but actually, one of them was on the second floor, the same floor that Zanna and Ethan were located, one of the other roommates. And we'll get into more details with that on the affidavit. Now, the roommate on the second floor woke up hearing what she thought was Kaylee and her dog. She later heard a roommate, and she's not sure which one it was, say, "There's someone here." Guys, listen to me. if you hear weird noises, and especially if you hear a roommate say there's someone here, whatever you're doing, stop, grab your phone, call 911. Even if it's not an emergency and you don't want to look stupid, it doesn't matter. You need to call 911 immediately and get out of the house. And I wish they would have done that.
Most officers, though, won't get mad.
No, they won't. They won't. No, now, if you call and they know you're jerking them around, they'll get mad.
Yeah. But if you call, you've heard someone, someone said someone's here, they'll be out and they'll be out quick.
Well, now, hopefully the roommate thought it was Kaylee, but investigators actually think it might have been Zanna because they learned that, you know, first of all, she gets the DoorDash. They think at this point, Madison, that they were already asleep and that Zanna, they learned, was on TikTok around 4:12 a.m. The wow. unknown roommate actually opened her door twice within a short period of time. The second time, she heard what sounded like crying coming from Zanna's room and a male saying, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." Now, this is in the affidavit, and so we'll know for sure if we have our roommates and their names and everything correct. A security camera at a nearby home picked up the sound of whimpering and a loud thud and a dog barking numerous times around 4:17.
Oh, boy.
That's so sad. That is so sad.
You know, a lot of people that hear dogs or hear someone whimpering or crying, they think they're crying, a boyfriend, they're just crying from some kind of, you don't, are you okay there? Very rarely does one think, what are you doing? Can you not put a shirt on like a normal person?
Says the one wearing a blanket as a shawl. Anyway, yeah. What were you saying?
It's just very rare when you see someone or hear someone crying or whimpering, your first thought isn't murder. Your thoughts either, oh, she's upset about something, I don't want to bother her. A lot of people, you've heard that there's signs and noises and they don't call the police.
And please bother. Me and Elena did a case on Crystal Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And she was murdered in the house of her friends. And they heard her crying and weird noises, but they didn't want to disturb her and her new boyfriend.
Disturb.
And he killed her, so... Okay, the roommate opened her door a third time and saw a figure clad in black clothing and a mask that covered the person's mouth and nose walking toward her. She didn't recognize the man, but she noticed his bushy eyebrows. He walked past her and exited through the sliding glass door. Police don't know if the man saw the roommate. I'm thinking not, because I think he would have killed her.
Would have killed her. I don't think. But yeah, because she would have recognized him. I don't think he saw her either.
I don't either. And the thing is that, like, if he's super focused on getting out of there, he may not have noticed her. She closed the door, she locked it, and then she remained in the room scared to death.
Did she call the police?
The first phone call did not come until 11:58 a.m. So this was like 4 something. She was paralyzed in fear. She didn't know what was going on. She sees this guy. She hears these weird noises, and she is terrified. The 911 call was made from someone inside the house. And it was one of the roommates, I believe, or a friend of the roommates that was asking help with an unconscious person. So police arrived. They noticed the door was open. There weren't any signs of forced entry or damage inside the house. Nothing appeared to be missing. The two roommates were inside the house with some friends there. So it appears they called some friends and they're like, hey, you probably need to call the police. So here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if the roommates tried, like, knocked on the doors, you know, of Zanna's room and then Kaylee and Madison's room, and no one answered. The dog was in actually a different room, which we'll get into that when we get to the affidavit. So it makes you wonder if they were scared to open the doors.
If I knocked on the door and someone didn't answer, and I knew that they were probably there or was a little suspicious, I'd probably try to open the door.
Yeah, I don't
You
know. I just.
know that it's locked, so something's wrong.
I'm just curious why they didn't call the cops sooner, and maybe that will come out in trial. It's just I can't get that part. That's a little bit hard for me to understand.
I agree. Why would you wait till 11?
Right. Now, the friends, okay, so it appears that they called friends over to the home because they believed one of the second floor victims was unconscious, not waking up. It's a bit confusing because it's a bloodbath, like something you would see in a horror movie. But if all the doors were closed, they may not know that. So I'm thinking they were probably frozen in fear. So police discovered four victims stabbed to death in their beds on the second and third floors. Zana and Ethan were on the second floor, Kaylee and Madison on the third floor. They were not gagged. They were not restrained. The walls were covered in blood, and like I said, literally dripping down the walls and outside of the house onto the ground. The dog.
Interesting. The big guy, the boyfriend, was a big guy, and then the coward murderer was a little scrawny looking kid.
I think he's bigger than maybe people think, though.
I wonder if they were just so drunk they couldn't fight back, or they were
I don't know if
asleep
they
and
were that
stabbed the
drunk.
big guy. Maybe he was asleep and stabbed the big guy first. I mean, it'll all probably come out in trial.
So the police believed from the cell phone evidence, the witness statement, and the camera info that the murders occurred between 4 and 4:25. So if that's the case, Koberger might have started with Kaylee and Madison on the third floor before he killed Ethan and Zana on the second floor, because remember, Zana had a DoorDash delivery. She was on TikTok. And so I'm thinking that maybe the third floor victims were first. So, I mean,
Definitely, though, because no screams, just a little
they
whimpering
were
here. You,
asleep.
yeah.
And they
Unless they
may.
killed you right away. I mean,
And they may have been drinking enough to where they were passed out. I don't know.
well, they're college kids and had a went to a party, so I would imagine they probably were a little tipsy.
So terror, of course, ripped through the small community. The university canceled all classes the next day. They scheduled a candlelight vigil for November 16th, but they postponed it for 2 weeks for November 30th. I am curious if Koberger was at it. The
I bet he
police.
was.
The police were confusing at first. They said there's no risk to the community and they felt that the killings were targeted. But then 3 days later, the police chief, James Fry, said that they couldn't say if there was a threat to the community. So many of the students and even the residents left Moscow early for Thanksgiving to visit relatives or to go back home. I do think it was targeted, but what I think happened is the more they started looking at the case, the more they realized it was a stranger on stranger.
I think.
Yeah. So at first they may have thought it was someone who knew the girls, but then when they started looking at the evidence, they're like, wait a minute, there might be some danger.
And there would be anyway, in my opinion. Anytime someone's killed, whether they knew the girls or not, and they hadn't been caught, that to me is a danger.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors happen. And so the police captain, actually Roger, he criticized internet sleuths and he said there's so much speculation without backing that spreading false facts and making everyone more frightened. Plus, they would have to track down all of the tips and all of the communications, and it was really taking a lot of manpower. So they said that they would press criminal charges against anyone that harassed or threatened anyone involved in the case. There was so much uproar and fear that people that were innocent were being targeted on the internet as being potentially involved.
Terrible. You know, once you're targeted like that or accused of something like that, it's almost impossible to shake that off.
It
It can
is.
ruin your whole life, and you're innocent.
Now, they did catch the guy, so whoever was blamed, the one I remember that was definitely blamed was the person that gave him, excuse me, that gave him a ride. They thought, and then her boyfriend, You know, people were wondering if he did it. Some said that she was stalked. I couldn't find any evidence of that. One of the victims was stalked. But they conducted the autopsies November 17th. All the victims were stabbed multiple times with fatal stab wounds in the chest and upper body with a large knife. It was believed to be the same knife or very similar knives for all the victims. So I think that the cops thought there might have been more than one perpetrator. But, you know, again, they were able to narrow it down to Brian.
Between all those people, it had to be, they were, might have been drinking a little, asleep. But I was thinking they would have to go for the most accurate place.
I don't think so, because if you look at Ted Bundy and he killed and maimed those four, it wasn't heard. You know what I mean?
They were asleep.
Yeah, but he was beating the hell out of them with wood. And people did hear noises.
They did hear noises,
but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing.
Noises. If you hear noises, though, I hear noises when it, you know, someone's walking down the street or stuff, but I don't, the first thing that comes to mind isn't that it's a murderer.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if I hear crying, I'm like, oh, the heartbroken, something happened. You know, I don't ever think, oh man, they're getting murdered. But as a single murderer for four people, you had to hit the target first, right away, to have a quick death.
Yeah, except that if you're a victim and you come out of your sleep and you see someone there, you might be paralyzed in fear, too.
It's true, too, yeah. But you go for the strongest first, I would think, which would be the boyfriend.
Not if he didn't know he was there and in a bedroom. He may have, they're thinking he went for the two girls at the top. So it makes you wonder if when he came down, Zanna saw him.
Yeah, right.
Or that's Ethan.
True. That's true.
And there,
but he was watching the house.
Well, he would see. I don't know if he was watching the house when they got there.
You don't think he was?
Well, I know from the affidavit he wasn't there when they got there.
Oh, okay. Why? I haven't been following this case at all.
And some think that they were attacked in their sleep. I don't agree. I don't think they were all asleep. Because again, Zanna,
the autopsy would show.
Huh?
The autopsy probably will show that, right?
I don't know, because they were killed so close together. But what I was saying is Zanna and Ethan were awake. You know.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had the food delivery. So I don't know how he subdued them so fast where no one screamed, but.
That's so puzzling to me.
He did. And so none were sexually assaulted. No weapon was recovered. On November 19th, police asked the public to provide any video they might have at the house for the night of the killings. A phone tip line and email was set up. More than 2,600 email tips, 2,700 phone calls, 1,000 digital media submissions came in. On December 24th, they had at least 15,000 total tips. Police heard that, again, Kaylee may have had a stalker, but they couldn't confirm it. I wonder if she noticed Brian stalking her or bothering her, actually. I think it's going to come out how he picked his victims. And I
do, because someone will know.
And if I'm thinking Kaylee was the target.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It'll come out because, you know, when you think you're being stalked, girls, especially college, anybody I would think would tell somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're pretty tight-lipped over this case.
They are. And people gave them a really rough time calling them Keystone Cops and Barney Fife and stuff. No, they were smart. Wait until we get to the affidavit. So on December 15th, police let the public know that they were looking for a 2010 to 2015 Hyundai Elantra. There were 22,000 of them in the area. A camera near the home where the killings happened caught an Elantra arriving in the neighborhood and then driving off very, very fast. The video showed that the vehicle passed by the victim's home three times, beginning at 3:29 a.m., then at 4:04 a.m., it returned to the home, and then at 4:20, it's speeding out of the neighborhood.
It's funny to me, you know, this guy's very smart, very intelligent, but does something stupid, you know?
Well, he may not have thought that they had cameras on their house.
I would think anyone these days would know there's cameras on all houses.
You would think so.
I know, right? And then to go once and then come back and again and come back. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, so let me go to the affidavit. And it's, like I said, it's 19 pages, and it's really disturbing to read because it's provided by a police officer named Brett Payne, and he is employed by the Moscow Police Department, and he has been on the job for 4 years, and he was called to 1122 King Road on November 13th at approximately 4 p.m., and he was one of the initial responding officers to the incident, and he, you know, saw everything. So he said, "I entered King Row residence through the bottom floor door on the north side of the building. Officer Smith and I then walked upstairs to the second floor. Officer Smith directed me down the hallway to the west bedroom on the second floor, which I later learned through Zana's driver's license and other personal belongings found in the room was Zana Kernodle's, hereafter Kernodle room. I could see a body, later identified as Kernodle's, laying on the floor. She was deceased with wounds that appeared to have been caused by an edged weapon. Also in the room was a male, later identified as Ethan, with sharp force injuries. I then followed Officer Smith upstairs to the third floor of the residence. The third floor consisted of two bedrooms and one bathroom. The bedroom on the west side of the floor was later determined to be Kaylee's room. I later learned from review of Officer Nunez's body camera, there was a dog in the room when Moscow police officially or initially responded. The dog belonged to Kaylee and her ex-boyfriend, Jack. As I entered this room, I could see two females in the single bed in the room. Both were deceased with visible stab wounds, and I later noticed what appeared to be a tan leather knife sheath laying on the bed next to one of the victims' right side. So Brian left the sheath for the knife on the bed, and they got touch DNA off of the snap.
I don't think he knew at the time he left it.
Nope. That's why I knew it was his first kill. And I was like, yeah, that's sloppy. Okay. And then the other two roommates, they were on the east side of the first floor. So this was the west side. They were on the east. Okay. On the evening of December 12th, 2022, let's see, Ethan and Zana are seen by the roommates at a party. At 9 p.m. Until 1:45. So they were there from 9 to 1:45, okay, a.m. At approximately 1:45, they returned to the King Road residence. And then Megan and Kaylee were at a local bar. And then they were getting their food at 1:56 in downtown Moscow. The occupants of the King Road residence arrived at home at 2, and they were asleep or at least in their rooms by 4, with the exception of Ethan and Zana. DM, one of the roommates, stated she originally went to sleep in her bedroom on the southeast side of the second floor, but she stated that she was awakened at approximately 4 a.m. by what she stated sounded like gone. Calves playing with her dog in one of the upstairs bedrooms, which were located on the third floor. A short time later, she said she heard what she thought was Gonclaves or Goncalves saying something to the effect, "There's someone here." DM stated that she looked out of her bedroom but did not see anything when she heard the comment. She opened her door a second time when she heard what she thought was someone crying in Zanna's room. She then said she heard a male voice say something of the effect, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." Now they talk about the dog barking. They talk about the camera that picked up the whimpering. The roommate, Diem, said she opened her door for the third time because she heard crying, and that's when she saw the killer. She described him as 5'10", taller, a male, not very muscular, but bushy eyebrows. She said that he walked past her in, quote, a frozen shock face. So that makes sense. He didn't see her.
Yeah, he didn't see her at all, no. If he would have, too, he would have killed her, probably.
100%, yeah. So they believe the homicides happened between 4 and 4:25 a.m. During the processing of the crime scene, they found a latent shoe print with a diamond-shaped pattern similar to a Vans-type shoe just outside the door of DM's bedroom.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man.
So that confirmed her statement that he walked by her. A video canvas of the neighborhood found footage in the early morning hours, and that's when they identified the white sedan, vehicle number one. There were multiple videos obtained in the area that saw the vehicle around 3:29 and ending at 4:20. The sighting shows suspect vehicle number one makes an initial three passes by 1122 King Road residence and then leaves via Willenta Drive. Based off my experience as a patrol officer, this is a residential neighborhood with a very limited number of vehicles that travel in the area during the early morning hours. Upon review of the video, there are only a few cars that enter and exit this area during this time frame. So that's how they were able to narrow it down. This is the guy, right?
No. Maybe they didn't see it, but don't you imagine he had to be just covered in blood?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I mean, covered in blood.
And then they saw the video entering the area a fourth time around 4:04 a.m. It looks like he tried to park and turn around the road, but he couldn't, so he had to go on down, did a three-point turn, and then was able to park. He's last seen departing the area at 4:20 at a high rate of speed. Based on my knowledge of the area and review of camera footage in the neighborhood, that does not show suspect vehicle one. I believe that the vehicle would likely exit the neighborhood at Palouse River Drive on the southern edge of Moscow that goes into Whitman County, Washington. Eventually, the road leads to Pullman, Washington, which is approximately 10 miles away. And so that's how people travel back and forth. So that's how they knew he probably lived in Pullman.
Oh, that's smart.
Such good police work.
Amazing. It's still amazing to me, though, being this year and such a smart guy that criminals are so stupid. I mean, you know there's cameras. There's cameras everywhere.
Well, he thought he could get away with it.
You think he wanted to get caught? I mean, it's not like he ran away or...
No, I don't. You know, and not only that, his alibi is that he was driving around. So... just a little alert to Brian. You driving by yourself in a car is not an alibi.
No.
Okay.
No.
Investigators suspected it might be someone that lived at the university. And they were given access to video footage of Washington State University campus located in Pullman, Washington. A review of the video indicated that at approximately 2:44 a.m., a white sedan, which was consistent with suspect vehicle one, was observed on WSU surveillance cameras traveling north toward Moscow, okay, onto SR-270, which connects the two cities. At approximately 5:25, a white sedan consistent with a suspect vehicle was observed on five cameras in Pullman, Washington, and on the campus cameras, and that it was going down Johnson Road and intersected with the road they would have taken out of Moscow. So they're pretty much, they know they've got this guy. So then on November 29th at 12:28, WSU police officer queried white Elantras registered at the college. As a result of the query, he located a 2015 white Elantra with a Pennsylvania license plate. It was registered to Brian Koberger, and that gives his apartment, et cetera, which is 3/4 of a mile away from the intersection that they spotted the suspect vehicle. They also noted in the affidavit that he has bushy eyebrows and his physical description is consistent with the description that the roommate saw in the residence. Further
I wonder if there was blood in the car. It had to be.
I'm sure. Yeah. Further investigation, including a review of the county sheriff's deputy CPL Duke's body cam and reports, show that on August 21st, 2022, Brian Koberger was detained as part of a traffic stop that occurred in Moscow, Idaho. At the time, Koberger, who was the sole occupant, was driving a white 2015 Hyundai Elantra with Pennsylvania plate, blah, blah. During the stop, which was recorded via law enforcement body camera, he provided his phone number, and they took that and began to trace it.
Oh.
Yep.
So smart.
And he had just registered his car in Washington. Okay. So he is an undergraduate with a degree in psychology and cloud-based forensics. The records show that Koberger wrote an essay when he applied for the internship with the Pullman Police Department in the fall of 2022, saying that he had an interest in assisting rural law enforcement agencies with how to better collect and analyze technological data in public safety operations, which, like you said, he knows technology. And that's what he wanted to specialize in and help him with. And yet that's what he gets caught with.
I know. That's crazy.
He also, they found a Reddit survey that asked for participants to provide information to, quote, understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision making when committing a crime.
Yeah, Beth, I heard that for sure.
They also were able to get his phone. Now, it did not show his phone was near King Road residence between 3 and 5, but the officer said, based on my training experience and conversations with law enforcement officers that specialize in the utilization of cell phone or cellular telephone records as part of investigations, individuals can either leave their cellular phone at a different location before committing the crime or turn it off. Well, they knew he turned it off because they spotted him before that time, his cell phone was in the area, and after.
So right.
They were basically able
to put
his phone and his car together with the cell phone data and the video footage.
Oh, my. Yeah, he was sort of sloppy, wasn't he?
He was. And so they do all that. I mean, it's a fascinating affidavit to read.
Where'd you get that, you said?
It's online.
Oh, is it the whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that normal practice?
It just depends on the station. Oh. They also found that he was there at 9:12 a.m. and 9:21 a.m. as well.
There where? At the crime scene?
Mm-hmm.
What?
And they learned that he had been there at least 12 occasions prior to November 13th.
Oh.
So he went back to the crime scene 2 times before the cops were called.
Wonder why?
Well, to see if the cops were called.
The cops were there yet?
Yeah. And then the fact that he was there 12 other times means he was definitely stalking.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that.
He also got pulled over by cops near their residence. And let's see.
What?
On December 27th, 2022, Pennsylvania agents recovered the trash from the Koberger family residence located in Albrightsville, PA. That evidence was sent to the Idaho State Lab for testing on December 28th, 2022. The Idaho State Lab reported that a DNA profile obtained from the trash and the DNA profile obtained from the sheath identified a male as not being excluded as a biological father of the suspect. At least 99.9998% of the male population would be expected to be excluded from the possibility of being the suspect's biological father. Based on the above information, I am requesting an arrest warrant be issued for Brian C. Koberger for burglary at 1122 King Street in Moscow, Idaho, and four counts of murder in the first degree for the murders of Madison, Mogan, Kaylee, Goncalves, Zanna Kernodle, and Ethan Chapman. I declare under penalty of perjury pursuant to the law of the state of Idaho that the foregoing is true and correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, he hadn't really said much, has he?
Mm-mm. Nope.
You know, I never hear anything that he said at all. He's keeping pretty quiet.
Now, okay, so a father of two children who lived in the apartment below Koberger's said that he was a night owl and he'd walk around all night washing things and made so much noise they'd wake up the kids. But he said he never saw friends visit him at all. I also found out that he used to use heroin when he was in high school. Mm-hmm. And then search warrants of Google and TikTok reveal that Koberger made contact with the victims as far back as 2021. So I don't know if it was several of the victims or just the one, but I'm wondering if that's how he selected them. His parents are from Brooklyn and they're a Christian family. His father filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy in 2010. And I wonder if that maybe added to feelings of feeling inferior, et cetera, because he did. He felt inferior. He didn't have very good social skills. He was kind of creepy. He had two sisters.
That was the dad.
Huh?
And that was the dad filed bankruptcy.
Yeah, but that still impacts a kid.
You think?
100%.
Why would you tell a child you filed bankruptcy?
Well, you can't buy them anything. You can't pay your bills. I mean, there's no telling how it impacted them.
Well, that part, yeah, but I don't think most people would tell their children, hey, I filed bankruptcy.
Well, I don't know if he told his children. I'm just saying that his dad filed for Chapter 7, and I wonder if that may have added to his feelings of feeling inferior if there was that big of a financial crisis and if he was aware of it.
Right. That's his dad there?
Mm-hmm. They pulled him over, and the cops wanted to see his hands in the car. They deny that that's why they pulled him over, but even the prosecutors are like, whatever. You guys right. pulled him over for sure. Now, his sisters are absolutely gorgeous. One was actually in a horror slash film and was murdered with a knife in the film, and the other is a mental health worker. Both have been fired from their jobs since his arrest, which I don't think is right.
That's not right, no.
He graduated. Do what?
Get pictures of them?
No.
Okay.
He graduated from Pleasant Valley High School in 2013, attended Monroe Career and Technical Institute in Bartonsville, but he dropped out a year later. He then went to Northampton Community College in Bethlehem, PA, earned his associate in psychology in 2018. He then worked as a security guard for the Pleasant Valley School District, the same district where his father worked as a maintenance worker and his mother as a substitute teacher. He then received a BA in 2020 and an MA in 2022 in criminal justice. Then in the summer of 2022, he moved to Washington to get his PhD, and he had just completed his first semester as a doctoral student in criminology before the murders. He had been a teaching assistant at WSU, but faculty members were concerned about his behavior and conduct. They discussed their concerns with him, but later terminated him due to, quote, his unsatisfactory performance, including his failure to meet the norms of professional behavior in his interactions with the faculty.
I wonder.
It makes you wonder, like, was he a creeper? Was he treating people weird?
I know. That's weird, especially if they terminated. Because I don't think he had a trigger on anything, right? He just was a cold-blooded killer.
Well, I don't think killers need triggers.
No,
they're all cold-blooded.
No, some do.
No, that's a myth. Yeah. That's a myth. They're going to kill whether there's a trigger or not.
That's true.
It does
Yeah.
add to the stress level, but the trigger isn't the problem.
No, that's not the problem, definitely. You're right.
He was
That's an
bullied.
odd bird. He was smart, kept to himself. Yeah, I just wonder in school, like you were going to say, if he was bullied a
Well,
lot
yeah,
or.
he was bullied in school. He had few friends. He was overweight. So
Oh.
you could tell he
He had
lost a
a lot
lot
of
of
weight.
weight.
Yeah, he lost a lot of weight.
And he also felt it was important to show how intelligent he was by complicating explanations of things and using big words. In high school, he lost a lot of weight, and his friends said that he became very aggressive and volatile.
He's a nice looking kid.
Yeah. They
You
said
look
he.
at him, you wouldn't think, you know, he'd go out and kill four people.
I think he
But
wanted to be the next Ted Bundy, quite frankly.
I wonder, yeah. A lot of people want to be the next Ted Bundy.
He always wanted to fight people and bully people, and he was mean in high school. He also used heroin in his early years, but he cleaned up by 2017. He's described as arrogant and socially awkward and never seemed to grow out of it. Several months before the murders is when he did that criminology survey on Reddit. And this study seeks to understand the story behind your most recent criminal offense with an emphasis on your thoughts and feelings throughout your experience.
Wow.
Yeah. So when they got him, so they surveilled the family home and they noticed that he would put all his trash in baggies wearing gloves and then
Wow.
place it in the neighbor's garbage, not his parents.
That's weird.
Well, it's not weird because he's trying to keep the evidence far from him, but it's stupid because the cops are going to be surveilling him. So he probably didn't think they had caught on yet, maybe.
I agree. Because if he thought they caught on, I think he would have probably tried to run, don't you?
Yes. Well, I don't know. He's arrogant enough. He might think he could talk his way out of it. But on December 30th, when they got him, he was in the kitchen wearing latex gloves, putting his trash in separate baggies.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Just crazy.
And they had tried to get his DNA in the trash, and but they couldn't. They could only get his dad, so that's how they knew that the killer was related to the dad. And now they understood because he was bagging up all his garbage and putting it in a different trash can.
I'd have bagged it and took it somewhere and put it somewhere.
He also wore gloves whenever he went into town and never threw away his trash.
That's just crazy. That's sort of a sign, though. I mean, you know.
Yep. So they took
Wow.
several items as evidence: medical style gloves, a silver flashlight, a pair of size 13 Nike shoes, several items of clothing. They also personally swabbed them for DNA. They found a pocket knife, a Glock 22 handgun with three empty magazines at his parents' home. They also took a cell phone, an Acer laptop, black face mask, two containers of a green leafy substance. I'm wondering if that's marijuana, and a book that with underlining on page 118. I wish I knew what the book was. They got his Elantra. They took the door panel, seat cushions, headrest, seatbelt, visor, brake, and gas pedals, as well as hiking boots, shovel, goggles, and other items. They're probably looking for blood.
Right.
When he was arrested, a source said that he was narrating to himself everything that was happening, and he kept saying, "I'm fine. This is okay."
But I don't think they would have had to take the car apart. It makes me wonder if he had plastic in there when he killed him, because he'd have a lot of blood on him.
That's true.
So I don't
Yeah.
know.
When since he's been in prison, they said that he keeps to himself. He doesn't make small talk with the guards. He obsessively watches news coverage of the murders, and he says the killings were really sad. On February 24th, 2023, the victim's home was donated to the university, and they plan to demolish the house and create a memorial garden to the victims. And then scholarships of the three girls have been created as well.
Oh, that's nice, but that's so
Now,
sad.
there may be a problem on the
That would have,
DNA.
huh?
There may be a problem on the DNA.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know which way it went, but when they first sent the touch DNA or the knife sheath off for
Right.
testing, I think it was to a lab in Texas and they weren't able to find any DNA, and then they sent it to a newer lab, I think in Idaho or vice versa, and that lab was able to find DNA. So they're saying that the defense is going to be like, no, if they didn't find DNA the first time, you can't say that they found DNA the second time. So they might try to use that. But there's so much evidence. I don't think it's going to matter.
There's a lot of evidence. I don't think that one thing's going to matter either.
So what do you think? What do you think about him? Like, what are your thoughts? Like, if he wouldn't have been caught, his mindset, you know, his killing instinct. Like, what do you think about him as a budding serial killer?
I think if he would have had the more patience to plan, but being his first kill, but I think definitely he would have killed again. Definitely.
I wonder how he got in. Some say that he actually got up on the second level balcony and went in that way. And if that's the case, guys, it doesn't matter if you have a balcony. You need to lock your freaking doors.
I don't think they found evidence he was did that, though, did they?
Yeah, that was one of the first reports.
You know, here's the thing, too. You know, I know people are so judgmental about most everything these days, but just because police are quiet and don't share everything doesn't mean they're stupid or barnified.
Exactly.
Listen, we've had cases that police are corrupt. We've had cases that police are, I mean, cold cases happen. I mean, and there's bad police work, but, you know, until you don't know that that's the case when they're quiet. A lot of times you hear them, they have to keep things quiet. They don't want it out because only the killer would know these things, or they want to make sure. I mean, you don't want stuff out there that's going to tell the killer what you're doing because you know they're watching news.
Right. And not only that, it wasn't a cold case. They actually got them pretty quick.
No, I'm just saying in general. You know, different scenarios for different police doesn't mean, what are you doing? Are you hitting your nose on your microphone?
I'm gently touching it. I'm paying attention. Go ahead.
Because it's distracting that you're punching your nose into the microphone.
Anyway.
And now the scroll. You see what happens when you get older? Mm-hmm. But your nose is really close to that thing. What are you doing? It's so weird.
So my thoughts. He's definitely a budding serial killer.
Yes.
He was arrogant enough to think he could kill four people and get away with it. However, I'm wondering if he didn't realize how many people were there. And when he encountered them, he ended up having to kill them. He was definitely shook when he left the sheath, was in that shocked state, as the roommate said, you know, raced out of the neighborhood, which is one of the worst things you can do because there's cameras.
Right.
I believe that there's probably some petty crime somewhere in the past. Either he wasn't caught stealing. Like, there has to be something there because they don't just escalate from nothing to murder. There was some type of criminal behavior or sneaky behavior that he did. I think
he did something more than just a little theft, don't you?
Well, there's no criminal history, so I don't know.
Right.
But I do think that he's full of rage. And I think that he targeted these girls because they were clearly out of his league. And I also can say with much certainty, at least on my end, that he is a psychopath.
I agree.
He studied murder. I do think he planned this, actually, because he'd been at the place 12 times. I think he was stalking his victims. I think he knew how he wanted to do it, and I think he picked a knife because he's full of rage. Because most people that use knives, they're very rageful, and it's a very personal thing, even if the victims are strangers.
Now, unless some evidence comes out, I think he knew they were all there. Because I think he was keeping an eye on things, you know, stalking.
Well, I think he definitely knew a whole bunch of roommates lived there, but they mixed up their rooms. So I think that his plan was to go after the victims on the third floor, and he waited long enough thinking they'd be asleep by four something, and Zanna and her boyfriend weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And we know he didn't get there till three something. So there's no way he could have known if they were asleep or not for sure.
But no, you didn't. But the odds are, knowing there's a bunch of people in that house, or, you know, college students, that's pretty ballsy.
It is. And in fact,
I don't know how many, if they're awake or
I wonder if he was already in the house when DoorDash came.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he might have been.
I don't, unless they say, I don't think he climbed up a balcony. I think he was either in the house somewhere or he.
He wasn't in the house when they got there.
Or the door, but the door wasn't locked or. No, not when they got there, but I don't know.
Well, that was the initial report, is that he got in through the balcony.
Then I wonder if that's still the.
Like, why would you think he wouldn't get in through the balcony? He can just climb.
It's pretty high.
It's not that high.
Whole floor.
It's not that high at all. Have you looked at the house?
Uh-huh. I looked at the house.
Let me see.
Only when it was on the news.
I wondered, too, if they, let's see, Moscow. And what's sad is that, you know, now this town is forever known.
Oh, I know.
Okay. So this is, let me bring up the screen share so you can see it. Oops. So this is the house. I want you to notice. No. Notice this ground. It is not that high. See how high the ground is?
Mm-hmm. But is the ground covering some of the flooring of the other balcony? No, because
there's not another balcony.
Down low. Yeah, so, I guess that didn't look too high. Yeah.
Let me see if they think. Okay, let me search. How did Brian Koberger enter house?
And a lot of these pictures and stuff, is that affidavit on the site too? On our site?
Not yet. Says he broke into, Brian Koberger, who had been accused of brutally murdering four University of Idaho students, allegedly broke into the apartment of a female colleague and moved items around as part of an elaborate ploy to manipulate her. Wow.
More coming up now.
Yep.
Woman asked him to, I guess his manipulation worked.
Yeah, I don't think they know. I know the initial report is that's how he got in, but
maybe that's what it is, and that's why you can't find anything.
Internet theorizes how he entered. let's see. Okay, the DM initially woke up to what she thought was someone playing with the dog upstairs. This would be consistent with the intruder entering through the balcony of the third floor room and trying to calm the dog from excitedly jumping upon someone entering. And this would also explain why the dog doesn't have any blood or evidence on it if this was an initial entry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why you doubt me. I mean, I pegged the whole thing.
I know. I just do. That's just what I do.
Well, I'm tired of talking about it then. I'm going to doubt my assessments.
That's just what I do. My mind goes many ways.
All right. Yeah. I'm tired of talking. My voice is tired. I've had a little bit of a slight cold.
When you edit this, look at the first one and go through slowly and see all those things that I saw. You're freaking me out with the eye thing now.
I'm freaking out because you're seeing balloons. You said confetti,
sure.
Bubbles or something.
Yeah, too.
Anyway, we need our tagline. What is it?
Be smart. Be rude.
And don't be a victim.
Yeah, I was going to say that for you, too.
And don't stop taking your medication if you see things that don't exist.
In I didn't Zoom. See anything. It was a true thing I saw.
Mm-hmm. Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?